Hello and welcome to the Money Talk podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, can you really put your money to use saving the planet? And will it cost you in terms of returns if you do? With this week being Good Money Week and with world leaders focused on climate change ahead of the COP26 conference next month, our focus today is ESG investing. If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. Greta Thunberg was in the news again last week, lambasting world leaders for what she called 30 years of blah, blah, blah when it comes to action on climate change. Whether the pace of change is quick enough for Greta, there's no doubt that politicians are being forced to take the issue more seriously. In doing so, they're only following the example of an increasing number of investors who want to ensure their money is used in a way that helps rather than hurts the environment. ESG investing, that's environmental, social and governance investing, is often presented as the way you can do it. To discuss it more, including whether you have to pay a financial price in terms of returns, I'm joined by my Fidelity colleague, Toby Sims. Toby, welcome along. Now, I mentioned there Greta Thunberg, and it's true to say, isn't it, that issues around climate change are increasingly topping the news agenda, and it's unlikely to be a passing phase.
Yeah, hi Ed. I mean, you're absolutely right there. You don't really need me to tell you that you look around now and the sort of the focus on the environment and the climate compared to where it was a decade or two ago has just massively increased in recent years. I think we're far more aware of our impact on the planet. We're seeing our impact materialize in events across the globe. And as you say, I think pressure is increasing on governments and companies to increase their sustainability game, to make sure that they're doing what they can to reduce their effects on the planet. So yeah, this isn't going to be a passing phase. If anything, we're going to be hearing more about it in the coming years, and it's something we've got to get used to.
Yeah, and hearing a lot more in the coming month or so. In particular, we have something called COP26, which is the UN's climate change conference. They've given it perhaps the most boring name imaginable, but it will be an important moment, and not particularly in the UK because we're hosting it, and the government has a strong incentive to put its best foot forward in terms of action on climate change. And this extra action, maybe there'll be targets around carbon use or renewable energy or whatever it is. It might be happening less quickly than, say, Greta Thunberg would like, Toby. But the fact is, it is increasingly ramping up, and it's one of the reasons why people increasingly see companies that can do their business without hurting the environment, if they're on the right side of these changes that are coming, they do potentially enjoy some advantages versus companies that aren't on the right side of that equation, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, on the one hand, this is a pretty universal thing. So every company, you know, across the board has got to improve their sustainability game. Everyone has got to make sure they're hitting targets which governments are imposing.
Yeah.
But obviously, if you're on the right side of that, if you're not, if your carbon emission levels are pretty low in the first place, then you're in a pretty good place to capitalize on that. Whilst other companies, you know, you think of the big energy companies, the big oil companies, are starting at a pretty major handicap there. And we know that investors are getting increasingly fed up with those companies which are struggling to keep a pace. But then you also have other companies which are looking to actively sort of make a positive impact, which are looking to confront these issues to provide some kind of solution. And I think these are the ones which can actively benefit from government interaction, involvement. I mean, you look across in the States, the recent infrastructure bill that Biden is trying to pass through now. And there's a lot of focus that, well, not as much actually as we perhaps first anticipated, but a lot of the focus there is on sort of green infrastructure transition. So companies which are on the receiving end of that, which are looking to build green infrastructure, are obviously in a good position to benefit from the current rhetoric around all this.
Yeah. And it's an interesting way that you frame it there. On the one hand, yeah, like you say, you've got companies that potentially are onto a loser because they are doing something that, perhaps is potentially damaging to the environment, in some cases certainly damaging to the environment. They might be regulated against. They might just see their consumers leave and not want to use them anymore. But then, as you say, on the other side, there's the companies actually servicing perhaps the renewable energy market or any other kind of secondary industry servicing the need of fighting climate change, and they simply have potentially a great growth opportunity, right? I mean, it's there's different ways to approach this from an investment point of view, and that's, Toby, where I want to kind of delve a bit more into this term ESG investing. People, I guess, are getting used to it, but it's still worth dwelling on exactly what it means, what it doesn't mean. Why don't you tell us what people should expect from an investment classed as ESG?
Yeah, okay. So I think the best place to start is just what it means, because ESG is actually quite a useful acronym, one of the few useful acronyms in sort of encompassing the various strands of what we're talking about here. So it stands for environmental, social and governance investing. There's a whole lot going on here, but if you do think of it in those sort of three distinct strands, it's quite a useful way of approaching it. So we've talked about the environmental side of things. It's kind of what we're expecting. I think the social and the governance perhaps get overlooked a little bit, but they're no less important. So the social side, I mean, we'll talk about how exactly you approach these things right now, but in terms of the concepts, social investing kind of means you're thinking about the societal impact of the companies you're investing in. So maybe if you're looking to positively impact, if you're looking for a positive impact, you're thinking about a company which has a positive impact on the community it works in.
Yeah.
And then governance, perhaps even harder to define, is really sort of the more like the more technical side of things. So we're talking about sort of director reimbursement here. We're talking about boardrooms. We're talking about stuff which goes on behind the scenes, which is perhaps a little bit more difficult for investors to engage with. But as I say, it's no less important. When we talk about what people should expect from their ESG investments, that's where it really starts to sort of blow up, because I think there are so many different ways in which you can approach ESG or sustainable investing. There are so many different companies and funds doing so many different things that what you should expect is very hard to pin down. I think one broad way of putting it is it's just people thinking about sort of the non-financial impact of their investments, and what they expect to come from that really can diverge greatly.
Yeah, and that's a good way to put it. In fact, you know, building on what you said there, you could imagine three different companies, all of which might score badly on ESG overall. If you had an oil company, for example, it's not going to be great on the environmental side of things, but it might be okay on the others. You might have a company, I don't know, a tobacco company that's its products are essentially killing its clients. That's not going to score well from a social point of view. And then maybe you've got the company that's got a terrible track record when it comes to governance. Maybe it's been involved in big scandals and it's hurt consumers in various ways. They're all stacking up in different ways. And this ESG term is encompassing all of them. But I guess what we're driving at here is that an investment, maybe that's a company or a fund or whatever it is, that scores well on ESG, you need to have a bit more understanding. It's not simple as a sort of one size fits all situation, right?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right there. I think understanding is critical here. I do think investors who sort of see a sustainable fund are in danger of not really understanding what that means. Or maybe they're fine with that. They just want to know that their money's doing something. But the danger is that investors who think who think it's doing one thing, it might actually be doing something pretty different from what they expect. And that's where you can have two different ways of in which people go about ESG investing, which is quite a useful framework in which to think about it, is some negatively screen. So some funds, for instance, will look to not invest in companies or industries which they think are having a negative effect. So perhaps they are tobacco companies, you mentioned, perhaps they're the oil and gas companies, perhaps they're arms companies, stuff like that. So they'll just say, nope, okay, not interested, I'm not going to invest in you. They get on with their business as usual, it's just they're not dealing with those. And that's them negatively screening against those industries. But then you have other companies which are looking to have a positive impact. So they're looking for companies which actively positively impact on whatever E, S, or G they're looking at. So you might be thinking about, I don't know, a renewable energy company is the sort of classic example. Mm. So a company which is really looking to confront the climate problem. So yeah, if you just look at a fund and see a sustainable label, that really opens a whole lot of doors as to what it actually means. Some will be more clear.
Yeah.
The title, you know, it might say renewable energy fund, in which case you can have a fairly clear idea of what it's going for. But a lot of the time, you've got to look at the disclosures. You've got to look at what the fund is saying and doing and investing in to really get a sense of what it is you're trying to get out of it.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. And I guess a lot of people might be listening to that and say, well, come on, guys, you know, you're in the investment industry. Why don't you make it more simple? But I suppose at the end of the day, it comes down to the fact that a lot of these issues are very subjective. You know, what counts as doing good in society? You know, is social media a positive for society, or is it a negative? You know, I mean, oil might be a cleaner cut case, but you've got, I don't know, a retail chain, but maybe it uses very cheap labor in the developing world. You know, where does that stack up? And often it comes down to people's personal preferences here. And we should probably say, you know, the industry itself is kind of wrangling with this at the moment, isn't it? It's trying to get its ducks in a row in terms of what ESG actually means, what people should expect. And there have been calls, I was reading from the IMF this week, or certainly someone attached to the IMF, saying that there should be more standardized definitions for this kind of stuff. But people need to understand that we're not there yet. And that means that, as you've said there, Toby, you know, when you see a sustainability rating on a fund, that's a decent starting point. But you've got to look underneath the bonnet, really, to understand, you know, how it actually works and whether the principles of the fund stack up with your principles. Now, something people might hear when they look into this issue is this term greenwashing. Why don't you give us an understanding at a broad level what that is, Toby, and how people should think about it?
Greenwashing really is a bit of a thorny subject. It is basically referring to companies or funds which say they're doing something, say they're having a positive impact, or say they've, you know, hit certain levels, but they're actually not. Now, on the one hand, that sounds pretty bad, and it is pretty bad.
Yeah.
It sounds like companies are deliberately misleading investors. And some companies inevitably are doing that. But not all companies that are guilty of greenwashing are doing that. It can be much more subtle than that. And they may not even be conscious of exactly what it is they're doing. And that's where this sort of like standardized terminology or semantics around ESG investing really need to improve, because it can be a murky area. So you can have companies which sort of, it may come down to clever marketing. They sort of imply that they're doing certain things, and they really stress their ESG credentials. But then actually, you sort of, again, that phrase looking under the bonnet, you sort of dive into what they're actually doing, and it looks like they're creating a bit of a false impression of what they're achieving. I always remember I was looking at the BP website recently, and, you know, a big oil company. And the first thing you see on their website is net zero, what they're trying to achieve, their sort of ESG stuff is really, it's the first thing you see. Now, I'm not saying that BP are greenwashing at all. That's not what I'm trying to get at. But you can see why companies are really trying to push this stuff now. There's a huge amount of pressure from regulators, from governments and investors,
yeah,
to ensure they're hitting the mark on this kind of stuff. And without really standardized frameworks around how exactly they go about it, you can see how things might fall through the cracks. So it's something that investors really should be aware of.
Yeah.
Again, right now, this is a personal thing. It's up to you really to look at the companies and the funds you're investing in and to decide whether it sort of suits your personal objectives,
yeah,
and what it is you want to achieve. Because it's not enough to just see sustainable on the label and think, right, that's for me.
Yeah. And that example of oil companies is a really interesting one, because a lot of people would say, well, how on earth can a fossil fuel company be regarded as scoring well on ESG metrics? But probably the companies that will be leading the development and innovation in something like renewable energies, probably going to be the oil companies, because they're the ones that are going to be wanting to stake out new markets for them to move into, because they know perfectly well that, you know, they'll come up a point when we simply don't want to take more oil out of the ground, and they're going to have something else to their, another string to their bow, as it were. So it does get sort of pretty complicated. Toby, I did want to just finally address this issue about returns from ESG investing. I mean, I'm older than you, and I've written about what used to be called, you know, ethical investing back in the day. And there was always this tension between, well, yeah, sure, you know, ethical investing, that's all fine, but you're going to leave a lot of money on the table because oil companies make a lot of money. And if you don't buy them, someone else will. And because you're not buying them, they'll get them cheaper and they'll be able to get a higher return. Is there anything to say, Toby, around that equation these days? You know, have ESG investments been able to hold their own versus traditional investing?
Yeah. I mean, again, it's very difficult to make huge sweeping statements about ESG as a whole because of all the reasons we've talked about, because there are so many different strands and because it's hard to define exactly what ESG is and isn't, blah, blah, blah. I do think in terms of holding its own and in terms of what you were talking about when you used to write about ethical investing and that sort of that assumption that you were kind of sacrificing on returns if you were going about investing this way, I don't think that really stands anymore. This is still a relatively nascent industry. I mean, certainly in terms of the levels of popularity it's at the moment, this has really been over the past couple of years that it's hit these new heights. Mm. So sort of data around returns and what investors can expect is still forming. But it seems basically like they're keeping a pace. I think what investors can expect really is for ESG to sort of, I don't want to say become the norm because that might be too far, but we're going to, because of the pressure that companies are under, like the oil companies, they're just going to have to improve their sustainability. Which means that actually, rather than thinking about ESG as perhaps a plus and advantage to your returns, companies are now seeing ESG as a risk that they've got to mitigate against, i.e. if they're not hitting certain criteria, if they're not reducing their carbon emissions by such and such, that poses a financial risk to them, both from shareholders and regulators. So from that perspective, it just makes good sense, really, for companies to make sure they're hitting these kind of levels. I think there's an argument touted to say that a good sustainable company is just a good company, full stop. I think that can be true. Again, I think that can be quite sweeping.
Yes.
I think you really need to understand what the company is you're investing in to make an assumption like that. But that sort of idea that basically you need to keep a pace as a company, as an oil company, you need to mitigate against ESG risks.
Yeah.
Means that there's not this sort of financial anxiety around returns, which I think there was maybe a decade ago.
Yeah, no, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think that, as you say, as more and more, and it's not just individual investors here, it's now big, large institutional investors, and this is very important. They now have mandates because perhaps they have reputational risk around these issues. They want to make sure that the money that they invest on behalf of other people is done so according to as much as possible ESG principles. That does create a risk if you're not scoring well on ESG principles, and so you can suffer a lack of demand for your shares, for example, if you're a listed company, because people see you as being a risk. I mean, there was lots of data in the last couple of years around returns of ESG versus non-ESG, and the problem with those comparisons is that you're always looking at a very specific period. ESG is actually done better than non-ESG investments over the last couple of years, I think it's true to say. But a lot of that would be down to, for example, specific shocks going on in oil, in exactly what we've been talking about, you know, a big collapse in the oil price about 18 months ago. So that will push that sort of comparison one way or the other over time. But I think if you look at the long-term trend, there's reasons to think that there are disadvantages for companies that don't score well on ESG in broad terms. Toby, look, we've covered absolutely loads there, and it's clearly going to be an issue that we return to again and again. But look, for now, that is all we have time for. Thanks an awful lot for joining me.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week. Please be aware that the value of investments and the income you get from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information doesn't constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Eligibility to invest in an ISA or a pension and the value of tax savings depends on personal circumstances, and all tax rules may change. You will not normally be able to access money held in a pension until the age of 55. Reference to specific securities or funds should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities or funds, and is included for the purpose of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you're unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor.